This is the Primal King Podcast, but first, a quick message.
Crosso Ranch has raised premium beef for 5 generations, but we've always kept it to ourselves, but not anymore. You now have the ability to get ranch-raised, USDA-certified beef from our mountains in Idaho delivered directly to your dinner table. Don't settle for growth hormones, steroids, or imported beef on the store shelves anymore. Go to CrossoMeats.com right now to place your order. Your body and your taste buds will thank you for it. Even our girls think it's really yummy.
Bye, Crosso Meats. I love it.
What is up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Primal King Podcast. This is episode number 64. All right, so super excited to introduce you all to a friend of mine, someone who I've known for a few years, who had kind of a similar upbringing as I did, and he has gone on to do some awesome things, built some great businesses, ton of wisdom and insight. I hope y'all enjoy this, so let's go ahead and let's get started. So the question is this: how do we live the best life that we can with the limited amount of time that we get to be here? Is it by accumulating success and fame and fortune and everything else that society tells us that we need in order to be fulfilled? Or is it much more simple than that? My name is Derek Wilson. I'm the host of the Primal King Podcast, and we're going to be answering this as well as many other questions as we move forward. All right. What is up, everybody? And welcome back to the Primal King Podcast. Very grateful to have this guy on today. This is someone I've had the honor of knowing for a few years now. He has a very interesting story, and we actually have quite a few parallels in our past. From a very young age, he dreamed of playing professional sports, specifically baseball. He excelled in his young career to the point that he was ranked one of the top high school baseball players in the world and earned a scholarship to play at the University of Florida. After his college career was over, he went on to play professionally for 3 years, but eventually was cut. Tried out for many other teams, but never did get another shot. After seemingly losing his identity, he hit some rough patches, but came back with a vengeance. He temporarily went through some manual labor jobs, sales jobs, and just about any other job he could find until he decided to use the same competitive spirit to make money that had allowed him to crush it at the baseball diamond. Now, he has helped scale multiple businesses past the seven-figure mark, including his own Bucks Brand of America. When it comes to e-commerce, print-on-demand, and pretty much anything to do with selling anything online, this is your guy. I want to welcome in Mr. Cody Neer. Again, Cody, thanks for coming on.
Derek, I'm excited to be on. I appreciate you.
Yeah. So I want to go back because, like I said, we have a lot of parallels, I think. I was doing a little research on you and, you know, where you talked about, I'd read one of your bios to where you were kind of all sports, all baseball, and you did it, right? Like, you excelled at it. So what was it like, first of all, kind of going through the process of being one of the top baseball players in, you know, I guess what, in the world, it sounds like?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, as you grow up and you say, what do you want to be as a, you know, when you grow up, up until I was about 22 years old, I still said I wanted to be a Major League Baseball player. So everything I did every single day was wake up, work out, hit, run, throw, mentally prepare, you know, talk to the right people, ask the right questions. Like, my whole mindset was, what do I have to do to be the best there? Right. And eventually when that's over, it's like, now what, you know? So when you go all in on something, as you know, in the last couple of years, you've gone all in, with the ranch and the business and stuff, like, there's no turning back and there's no plan B, right? So when I was growing up, that was my mentality. And I had that mentality because I was the youngest of 5 kids. My dad poured concrete. Construction, he wasn't rich. You know, when I say he poured concrete, like, he dug holes and put concrete in them every single day of his life. There wasn't an excess of money every month. There wasn't a, can I have this extra thing? So when we got, you know, got things that we wanted when we were younger, it was an honor. It was, you know, a privilege. It was, you know, we were happy about it. We were as thankful for it. And so having that mentality of, like, hard work, blue collar, what you get what you earn, and then your no turning back mentality, it was a culmination of, like, you know, essentially build of character, where it led me to where I am today. You know, like, that's what put me to where I'm at today. But the building of the character piece put me to the point where it was almost a detriment to character to me. You know, it's almost like a downfall because I didn't have the luxury of being surrounded by, parents that said, you probably need to maybe start thinking about other things, or friends that said, what do you have with your finances? Or, what do you participate in? What do you think of about college and those type of things? I didn't have that luxury. I had a all in, work hard, get what you earn, work with your hands type mentality. So growing up as the youngest of five kids with that mentality, it's pretty hardening. It builds a leather skin and pretty black and white mentality mentally, I would say. That's the mentality that I've come from, and that's where I am still in business. And I work every single day to get around people that have better perspectives to help me grow now that I'm an adult.
Well, when you're going through the baseball and being one of the top players, what do you think drove you to get there? Because there's kind of like the both things, right? Like you had said, you didn't have really anybody saying, hey, what else could you do if this falls through? Because you'll hear certain people that'll be like, hey, don't have a plan B, right? And I know that, especially kind of in some of the internet marketing circles, it's the burn your boats. It's the don't worry about if you're not successful, right? But like, how do you reconcile that with, like, again, like going all into something, but yet also maybe kind of setting yourself up in case, because I mean, I know a ton of people that were great athletes and they were one injury away and their entire identity was gone, right? Or maybe in your case, like you just, for whatever reason, you got cut, you didn't make it, in my life, like injury, stuff like that. So how do you kind of reconcile the two of like going all in, burning your boats, but yet also understanding that something like professional athletes, there's not a whole lot of those guys out there.
Yeah, so it's 0.003% of individuals who play high school get a chance to play college. That's 0.003%. And then from college, it's, add a bunch more zeros to go play professionally. Knowing that going into it, which I did, that was what made me realize, like, there's a small window of opportunity and there's a very small error of margin. Because, for instance, one of my best friends growing up got drafted very high into Major League Baseball. If you Google his name, it says greatest outfield arm to ever play baseball. And the guy literally lives in Dallas in an apartment, makes no money, has no life, has made nothing of himself. But from an athlete standpoint and a baseball, his, that short margin of error, his opportunity, that window that was open, he didn't capitalize on it, right? So seeing that and then seeing kind of, understanding where I've come, I was blessed with the ability to have, both my mother and father, have older brothers and sisters who made mistakes that I could learn from, have friends around me who had, good support systems. But I wasn't blessed in the fact of it was a mentality. If I wasn't playing baseball, then what was I going to do? Like, it wasn't that mentality. It was like, you're playing baseball. Like, that's what you do. It was Cody Near, the baseball player. Oh yeah, he plays baseball. Like, when you reference my name, it was, yeah, played baseball, went to University of Florida professionally. Like, and then it ends for almost everybody who knew me from my childhood, right? They have zero clue about anything else. So in my mind, there was a point where when it ended, it was like, okay, vacation's over. My mentality has to switch or change. And bills have to be paid, and I have to make a life for myself, whichever way that is. It's not going to make a life for me, like, life isn't going to make me happen. I have to make something in life happen, right? And I did fortunately have the mentality of sports behind me mentally to say, I'm not going to quit. I'm going to wake up every day. I'm going to do this, do that. Some people don't have that, they wake up and they just start, alcohol or drugs or women or whatever it may be. And luckily, thank the Lord, I chose the previous one instead of the latter. But I don't know how. I mean, honestly, I don't know how you can really say playing sports, being the best, transferred over to where I'm at now. But I do know that when you burn the bridges, as you say, and go all in, it's hard to rebuild the bridge to get somewhere else. I can tell you that. There's a lot of people in our shoes too. Like, I know for a fact, you, high school quarterback, Wayne State, you probably got the homecoming queen. Like, you're the man in the town. Like, I know this. Then what? After that, then what? Like, you and I share the same story that way, like you said, because you share this, like, you know that story, and you, I don't even know how you would describe it. You would probably do a better job of describing how we reconcile that than I could, because I can't describe how I go from to that to this, you know, I can't.
It's tough. It is, you know, and I agree. I don't know how you do it, because I think that there is part of it to where when you reach some of these accolades and stuff in sports, I think the good side of it is that you understand, like, okay, I don't know if this is going to come off arrogant, but it's almost like, okay, I can be the man. You know what I mean? Like, I can accomplish this stuff.
Yep.
But then there's the other side of it that's like, what if I peaked at 18 years old? Or, you know, like, athletes go through this a lot. What if I peaked at 25 years old, you know, when I made it to the NFL and made a couple million bucks or whatever, and then they lose their identity. And that's kind of where I wanted to go next, because I would like to go back to where, let's say the last time that you got cut and you're like, this is it, it's over. I'm not going to do any more tryouts. I'm not, like, what was going through your head? Like, do you remember that day vividly?
Oh, yeah.
Or what was going through your head?
January 4th, 2011. I don't think I'll ever forget the date. So in December, well, technically it was October 20th of 2010. I went back to college because I, you know, came out of college to go play pro ball. I went back to college to wrap up my degree. I had met my now wife, and that day, October 20th, 2010, I was playing pro ball. I was going into my third team. And I was sent down to South Florida. They had 16 catchers and it was low A ball, 16 catchers in low A ball. So I'm, you know, one of 16 in low A. So you've got rookie ball, you've got low A, you've got high A, you've got double A, you've got triple A, and then you got the major league. So I'm on, not in rookie ball. I'm just one step up in the minor leagues, but with 16 other catchers, and I'm one of 16. And I go down there, report for 5 days. I catch bullpens. I think I caught bullpens for like 20 hours a day, like legit. I think I was waking up at like 4, I was catching bullpens at 5. And I don't think I tapped out till about 8 or 9 o'clock at night, had dinner. And sometimes I went back and caught a couple more bullpens for guys just because I wanted to, because these guys were double A guys or major league guys that were, you know, down at our spring training facility. And I was happy to be around them. But essentially what happened was I get called into the office. They say, hey, here's a 16-year-old kid. We just got it from the Dominican. He's going to start on this low A team. And I'm like, he's going to start? Like I'm the most veteran. I'm clearly better than him. Like, I had better numbers than him. I'm stronger than him. I'm faster than him. I'm a better player than him. Why is he going to start? And they told me, well, his numbers – and I said, what do you mean? They're like, no, we gave him more cash than we've given you. And at that moment, I realized I'm literally just a number on a sheet, and it means nothing to them who I am, the name on my back. None of that stuff matters. It's how much money they invested to the player is the only thing that they cared about. It was dollar bills, and it was a business. And that conversation where it was like, yeah, we got more money invested in him. It wasn't like, it no longer came down to my ability, you know, like, it didn't matter if I was better. And when it hit me like that, I was like, all right, what am I doing? Like, if it doesn't even matter, what am I doing? You know? And I remember calling Jana, and I said, you know, I'm heading back up of South Florida. I'm heading back up there, which is Central Florida. I'm heading back up to you tomorrow. And she's like, what do you mean? I'm like, I'm done. Like, I'm out of here. And she's like, oh, well, whatever you want to do, you know, like, okay, I'll be here. So I remember driving home and just thinking, man, that's nuts. You know, like, and that's this period that started where I was trying to go from baseball player to now my new identity. You know, what was that going to become?
So what did you do from there? Did you go back and just instantly hit Craigslist and start looking for jobs? Or did you sulk for a couple of days or just get drunker than hell? Or like, you know, you hear everybody doing different things. Like, what did you do after that? Was it kind of a rebound process, or did you know that you just kind of had to hop right back in and get some things done?
Man, so honestly, I called a few of my old coaches, called a few of my old connections. I was like, hey, man, you got any teams, you know, anybody? I did my search around. I spent about a month, 30 days sulking in my sorrows, drinking, going out. You know, I wasn't really drunk because I had Jana around. So I was like, you know, well, I'd go out and, you know, we'd get drunk and, you know, try to like cover up my feelings. But yeah, I spent a month trying to figure out, all right, do I get another opportunity? Is there going to be a chance out there? 30 days go by, 45 days go by or so, and there was no other opportunity. It was like, well, you can come play independent ball, or you can do this, or you can come to, you know, Midwest and do that. And I'm like, man, I'm down here. I'm not about to drive all the way to Midwest to go again do this. So took about 30, 45 days. And then that 30 days was up, and it was like the bill was due, you know, like the rent was due, the power bill's due, ledger's due, truck bill's due. And it's like, I do remember, honestly, waking up, getting a call and them saying, hey, your truck is down here. We had to impound it. And I'm like, what do you mean you had to impound the truck? Well, you hadn't made a payment on your, it was a buy here, pay here truck. You hadn't made a payment on it. And I was like, well, holy shit. I didn't realize y'all just really came and picked it up. I thought I was going to be able to pay you and like catch up. So I remember having to go get the truck out of the impound. I actually had to borrow money, pay off the truck payment I owed them, and then go pay the, you know, the towing truck company where they impounded at to get the truck back. And then at that moment, I was like, man, I gotta figure something out. If they're going to start taking my vehicle, my wheels, I'm not even gonna be able to get to work. And I think the first thing I did was I called my dad and was like, hey, can I come out there and pour concrete and lay blocks and whatever I got to do? He's like, yeah, $10 an hour. Like, you know nothing. So come on out here. I'll give you 10 bucks an hour. And I think the following Monday, I started, you know, doing labor jobs.
So why didn't Jana leave you right then?
I was good looking as hell, boy. Let's be real. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, I mean, I gotta say, like, charismatic and like, I'm young and vibrant, and I feel like I'm good looking. I got my head on my shoulder. I just graduated college. I was playing pro ball. Like, I had a lot of things going for me, but like 30, 45 days in the dumps, I don't think it was long enough. I think if I spent more time, it was a matter of like, she probably would have, you know, started looking in different directions. But that was another reason why I probably got my head out of my ass fast.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I say that jokingly to you, but I ask the same thing about my wife all the time, you know, so, but no. So then you go, you do some different odd jobs and everything else. But then I want everybody to know how you ended up working with Target, right? Cause everybody knows Target.
Yeah.
And obviously you had a lot of success there. So what kind of led you into that?
Well, so, my wife and I, or girlfriend at the time, Jana, wife now, We were in Florida at the end of 2012 when I was working labor jobs, and my decision was, man, I got to do something. I'm gonna go back to school. You know, that's always the thing when you're young. I'm gonna go back to school. It's gonna save me. So I was like, well, what am I doing if I go back to school? So what I did was I went back up to Nebraska where she was from, and I got a master's degree in education, thinking if I get a master's degree in education, then what I'll do is I'll be able to coach college baseball, because in order to coach college sports, you have to have a master's degree. And I was like, I'm trying to build my thought process of my mind of what I want to do in life. And so I did that. Well, while I was getting my master's degree, I still had bills, and I still had, you know, but I didn't have the ability to call dad and say, hey, can I come work a labor job? So I started getting on these Craigslist sites, and I started looking on these, you know, odds and end jobs and stuff. And I did find, literally, I found a guy on Craigslist who had like sales roles, and he had like marketing roles and like sales rep roles and stuff. So I started working for this guy on this electronic check payment processing company, where basically sold, you know, payment processing for credit cards and then high risk, deposit for checks. And what they did was they basically would help people get out of their timeshares. And having the background being from Orlando, like, I knew everybody down in Orlando. I was like, hey, got a timeshare? Yeah, I got one. I'm like, you want to get out of it? This was 2011, 12. They're like, yeah, I've been trying to get out of this thing since the last few years, 2008, you know? And so, man, I just like, I was rocking and rolling, making cash, you know, selling this stuff, also getting a master's degree. And my process of finding customers was social media, was getting on these marketplaces, was, you know, I would find products that were on marketplaces and flip them to make cash so I could, you know, have more money while I was making, you know, these, doing the sales job and getting a master's degree. Once I finished getting my master's degree, you know, I had just spent 2.5 solid years of literally a laptop open in engineering the internet, you know, any which way I can finagle the internet to make money. And, you know, much like most people, they go to Google, they type in how to make money online. I got to that point where I'm like, I'm done with my master's degree. I'm selling some stuff for this guy. I'm making some cash. I'm flipping stuff, products online, and doing arbitrage. And I was like, all right, how do I make this a real business? How do I make a real life out of this? I literally Googled how to make money online, and no one, like, you know, you have the, all the gurus pop up. And like, this is my first case of the gurus. Like, I didn't know what a guru was. Like, I didn't know there was an actual life where people played like they knew everything and they didn't, but they sold you stuff to get you where you want to be, but they never got there. Like, I never knew that was a thing. And I came across, you know, a guy that we know, he's very well known in the internet marketing space. I don't even mention his name because I've met him and I don't even like the guy. Like I got to meet him and I'm like, you're whatever. But anyways, this guy had a program at the time. He sold you how to do SEO. People know who this is probably by that, but he basically taught you how to be an SEO expert. And so I was like, all right, cool. I know what SEO is now. I've been on the internet trying to finagle this thing. I know how to do this. So I bought his course. And when I bought his course, it started teaching me what SEO was and the ins and outs of it and everything. Went on his webinar, which, you know, we know webinars in the world now. And he sold me and I was like, all right, you know, Jana, you got money. Let me pay for this thing. I've got the webinar, paid for the course, went to the course, and it taught me how to do SEO. And I kid you not, at the same time I was done with my master's degree, Jana and I looked at each other and we said, what do you want to do? And she goes, I want to be in a corporation. I want to be in a job. She was in the dental field at the time. And she's like, I'm done doing this, making, you know, 12, 14, 15 bucks an hour. Like, I want to get in a corporate job. And we're like, well, what does that look like? So she started applying for jobs, you know, at these corporate jobs that we knew. And she landed a job at a trucking company, doing like what they call like a customer service rep, which is like operations. And it was like triple the amount of money we've ever made in our life for her just getting this job. We're like, all right, sweet. That's awesome. And while she did that, you know, we had like a little foundation finally, you know, like we can get us a house, we can pay the rent, we can, you know, buy a meal, we can pay for our vehicles. And I had this little like itch in me of like, I'm going to learn how to do internet marketing and SEO and whatnot. So I spent the next year basically selling people on the stuff I learned in this one course, you know, like, you know how these people are. So I like, I know how to do this. So I'm going to find people that need it done and I'm going to go sell it to them. So I did that for a whole year. And while I was doing that, I learned how to do, you know, PPC ads. And then I got into, you know, what is SEM versus SEO? And I started learning all the different ins and outs of internet marketing and digital marketing. And then I was like, all right, I'm ready for a big boy step. So Jana was like, yeah, you know, like it's been a year or so. Let's, you know, like what's the next step? And so she applied for a job at General Mills in Minneapolis. And, you know, Minneapolis is the hub of Target Corporation. And she had got the job and it was another like double the amount of money that we have ever made for her. So again, she takes the job. Here I am. I'm the scrapper guy. I'm like a no official job. I'm in the basement every day watching guys on webinars. You know, like she has no clue what's going on, but I'm always somehow pulling in, you know, $500,000, $600,000 a week trying to, you know, do stuff. Eventually, while we're in Minneapolis, I start looking at all these different jobs that were titled SEO managers and like SEO, because I'm thinking, I know SEO now. I just spent the whole year doing it. I'm like, no big deal. So there's a job at Thomson Reuters, which is a $6 billion company that is in Minneapolis. And it says SEO, it's like SEO manager. Applied for it. I go in, the guy goes in, he's like, hey man, nice to meet you. He's like, my name's Bob. I'm like, hey Bob, nice to meet you. He's like, yeah, I played baseball in college. And I was like, cool man, me too. We never talked about the job description again at the end of the job. He's like, you got it. We never talked about the job again. It was just like, we talked, had a good conversation as people. And he gave me the job. And it was like, I think it was like a $55,000 a year job. And again, I never had a real job. Like this was officially my first real job. And I came home and I was like, man, we're rich, babe. Like you got a job. I got a job. We're rich. And I did that for about a year. Now we're going into like 2014. And we did that for a year and like we were living high on the hog, Minneapolis, you know, having a good time. We both had nice cars and nice house, making about $100,000 as a couple. Like we thought life was great. I saw this role. I'm like, all right, time to make another step up this year. So I saw this role online. It said paid social media advertiser, team lead, Target Corporation. I applied for it, walk into the interview, 23rd floor of downtown Minneapolis on Target Corporation's headquarters, walk in. A young kid shakes my hand. I'm like, hey, nice to meet you. I'm like, here for the interview. He goes, yeah, you're having an interview with me. And I'm like, cool. I'm like, well, nice to meet you, man. And he's like, yeah. So I saw on your resume, you played baseball. I was like, yeah. So I started talking baseball with this guy. And he's like, yeah, man, how about the Twins? And I'm like, actually, my buddy plays center field for the Twins right now. His name's Jordan Schaefer. He's like, no kidding. I'm like, yeah, man, he's the center fielder on the Twins this year. He's like, he came from the Braves and stuff. And that right there, I was like, boom, I was in, you know? I was like, yeah, man, he's going to be here. He's in his game, whatever I call him. We're in. He's like, cool, man. About 2 days later, I get an email that says, we want you in for a follow-up email from my boss. And I was like, all right, cool. I got past the first interview by BSing my way. Second interview comes in. It's like an old guy, gray beard. He's like, listen, one thing on this application is one thing that we just happened. Target just came out of a – they just got breached from credit cards. Like, this was the era where Target – remember people were scanning credit cards and stealing people. They said, one thing we liked about your history was you come from – credit card processing, payment processing, you understand the compliance about that. You have that background and you come from an SEO background. You understand what we're trying to do from a paid advertising standpoint. We want you to lead a team to be the first ever people to run Facebook ads, Twitter ads, social media ads. But we want to make sure that we are compliant from making sure that we can run ads to our .com site and just make sure that we're safe. And I'm like, you know, in my head, I'm like, well, you're going to be safe because, you know, once they get to the site, you guys, everything there. I'm like, sure, I can do that. This guy was like, make, you know, sure, I can do that. Sounds great. He goes, all right, we really like you. I think we're going to make you a job offer. I'm like, that's awesome. It's, you know, it's a six-figure job offer. I'm like, man, this is amazing. You know, like, this is great. I just doubled my income, got this new job opportunity at Target. I come in there and there's one other girl there and she's like, hey, I've been on the team that ran Google ads for Target and I'm on your team now. And I'm like, what do you mean you're on my team? She's like, well, you're the team lead. It says you're the team lead. And I'm like, what's that mean? She goes, well, I was told that our first job is to go hire about 20 people. And I was like, cool. I've never hired anybody. I just got hired for the second time in my life. Like, this is my second time I've ever been hired for anything. So we literally started hiring people in positions for creative, for copywriting, for project management, for basically every possible role that you can imagine to execute on running a paid social media ad. I'd never opened up business manager in my life, by the way, Facebook ads manager, no clue. So I looked at this girl, her name was Kate, still friends with her today on Facebook. Her husband and I, we actually became good friends and played slow pitch softball together. So we actually started out working at Target, both of us, her and I. Nobody had ever ran a Facebook ad for Target ever. They put an Amex card on the Facebook ad account, and they said, you have two goals. One is to get more users on the Cartwheel app, and two is to drive sales on .com. There's the Amex card. You got to hire people, do whatever you need to do. And that's how I got the job at Target Corporation. And there's obviously a lot of stuff we did while we were there I could talk about, but that's how it landed me the Target job.
It's crazy. So basically, you got your foot in the doors from all the baseball stuff and just being
all good, I knew.
Yeah, talking. And then you do that. So then you have this great job, right? You have this great job that probably a lot of people would kill for, right? I mean, it's a big corporation. You know, it's a place that's probably going to be pretty stable. I mean, really, it's potentially a place where you could retire from, right? And so why would you ever leave that? I mean, I don't know anybody who would ever walk away from a good paying job, right? So,
yeah, well, it goes back to baseball mentality. If I'm going to do something, I want to be the best. And then every day I wake up, I want to get better. And I still had this massive hole where I was like a failure at not making it Major League Baseball. But while I was excelling in career, and technically for me, it was like my second or third job. While I was selling there, you know, like things were great. I still had this like piece of like, you know, six figures is cool, you know, like, but like that guy over there is making a million and, you know, that guy over there is making a million. And I remember that guy that taught me how to do SEO a couple years ago and he was making multi-millions according to him. You know, he had a Lambo in his picture. Like that was my mentality. I'm like, there's gotta be some more. And what happened was, is I started running these Facebook ads. I actually went to Facebook headquarters. They came out to Target. Sat down with, you know, Facebook. They were like, well, what do you want to see on an ads platform? How does it want to work? I mean, literally from the inception of a Facebook ad, people were running Facebook ads already, but like at an enterprise level for Target, they had never, like Target had never, Walmart had never spent money on Facebook ads. They were the lower end people that were running Facebook ads. People that were selling the, you know, POD stuff in 2013. Facebook as a whole had never really tapped into a major enterprise level for running ads for it. Like Target was a big one. Walmart was a big one. So we worked with Walmart. We worked with Facebook. We worked with these big major retailers. And basically we told them, here's how we want a platform to work. And if people remember this at the time, there was something that we created called the Power Editor. And the reason they invented the Power Editor at Facebook was us. We were like, we can't get enough done accomplished in Facebook ads when we can only do one thing at a time. We want to do, like, the reason they call it the power editor, we want to run 10 ads at the same time, 25 different copy, you know, five different creatives. We want to send them to 20 different links. We want to have all these different images. And that's why they invented the power editor. And when we basically started doing this stuff, we started spending a ton of money on ads, and we were making a lot of money for Target. Like, there were a lot of people clicking and buying products. Some of our strategies, for example, for Cartwheel, when you want to download an app, we would run an ad on Facebook that says, you know, Cartwheel, this month only, patio furniture, 25% off any patio furniture in any retail store of Target. Download the app to be able to redeem the app in store, the discount in store, to actually get the 25% off. Now, if you walked in the store and you didn't have the app, you couldn't get the discount. So it was download the app, which gives you the discount that you take in the store. Now you buy the product. We had verifiably what they call off-site purchases. We could verify that people were coming from the app, going in the store and making purchases. Now, the off-site purchase feature that people see on Facebook is another thing that we basically came up with. It was like, well, how are we going to track the sales that we make from a user that spends it inside the retail store versus buying it online? So that's where that offsite feature came from. We were like, okay, well, if they download the app, there's a user's email. Well, if they go in the store and you insert that app or you scan that app, track that back from the store and send it back to us and say that, hey, they purchased it in the store. So we could start seeing, man, okay, I think we spent 2014, we spent about roughly, I say close to $13 million in ad spend. This Amex card never maxed out. We were spending the crap out of money. And we had hundreds of millions of dollars in transactions because we were running nationwide ads to Target. People were buying $1,000 products. You know, there were downloads, people buying through the app, buying in store. And we were getting people to go to .com Target and buy products. We were getting hundreds of millions of dollars in sales. I think we spent verifiably through Facebook, we spent roughly around $13 million. We did close to $60 million in sales that we could see inside Facebook. But we knew we had that offsite purchases. In my head, you say, well, how did I leave this job? In my head, I'm seeing this and I'm like, if I can spend money on a Facebook ad and I can send people to an ad that sends them to a store where they buy a product, why can't I do this myself? Like, if I just did $56 million for Target, let me figure out what Target sells a lot of, and I'll go make my own store for that. So I started going down that avenue of like, how do I sell my own products? How do I get in e-commerce? And while I didn't realize at the time I was in e-commerce for Target, but like I didn't realize at the time I was, you know, I came up short basically on my mindset. I said, well, how do I create my own store and sell my own products running Facebook ads? So what I did was I basically find t-shirts and hats and stickers and decals in a product line that I seen Target was doing well in. Be transparent. It was the, you know, the stupid shirt line, you know, people making dumb shirts that said, you know, stupid sayings and whatnot. And I started doing the same thing. I started running my own Facebook ads and buying my own shirts. And that's what kicked me off of seeing, okay, man, I have my own products now. I have my own store and I'm making my own sales. Once I hit a threshold of I can replace the income I made at Target, which was less than a year later, that's when I said, I'm leaving Target, you know, I'm going to go all in on e-commerce. And that's when I went and started my, you know, as you introduced it as the Bucks of America brand for, it's a deer hunting and fishing brand.
So you get this six figure job, you kind of had bounced around everything else. What does your wife say when you're like, honey, I know we have this awesome corporate job, but you know, I'm going to walk away from it.
She says, which I still never forget. She still says it today. I could deal right now. I could walk down to her and say, I want to go into underwater basket weaving. And she's going to say, whatever makes you happy.
That's awesome.
That's the reason why I married her. She's like verbatim, whatever makes you happy. Whatever. I could literally tell, I do tell her every year. I tell her, hey, I'm going to be gone all of November. I'm going deer hunting across the world. And she says, whatever makes you happy, have fun. And like, it's the greatest thing ever. Like to know, like, yeah, she's going to support it no matter what I do. So that's the cool part about that. So when I told her that, she was like, all right, whatever makes you happy. And whatever made me happy involved us moving from Minneapolis. And she says, okay. She had General Mills job. It was awesome. Cush. Great. We ended up moving back to Nebraska where she was from, where I took my master's degree at, and starting that business. And then she found another job. She found a job with company called Smart Chicken, who is now bought by Tyson for some odd hundreds of millions of dollars the last couple of years. So wasn't no, you know, wasn't no slouch company. So she found another cool job, got another pay raise. So she was moving up in her career too, and all was well. You know, we had started our own, I started my own e-commerce business, and she got another new job.
That's awesome. So then when you get into this Bucks brand, because a lot of people, I don't think that listen to the podcast really understand a whole lot. For those of you wondering what SEO is, it's search engine optimization. It's basically what, when you put something into Google, what makes you get found, right? If we were to paint it really simplistic. But so you go through this, and I think a lot of people, especially now, right? Because COVID's going on, people are stuck at home, people are losing their jobs. And I think a lot of people are turning to this online thing. So you kind of grew up in sports and everything else, but do you feel like maybe you have like this technical working brain that allows you to sit down and figure out how to make money with the interwebs? Or if somebody is like, hey, I've always wanted to sell something online, or I make this cool little deal. Like, do you feel like you have to have a certain, I don't know, intelligence level, or like, what, I guess, like, what do you think it is that allows you to be so successful selling online? And maybe what can some of these people do who want to do some of that on their own? Like, what steps could they possibly take?
I think to your point, and to my benefit, and to a lot of people's benefit, if you can be very pragmatic, and pragmatic means just very cut and paste, you know, very black and white, very transparent, very step one, step two, step three, not trying to go from one to 25. If you can just be very intentional about what you want to do, you know, and just make it make sense. Don't go into like trying to sell products online and try to like get technical with it. If you just be very simplistic with this, your main goal is to have a product that somebody else wants to buy and put that product in front of them so they can buy it. At the end of the day, if you can do that, you can be successful. And that was my mentality. It's like, I don't need to, you know, if I just keep being simple, put the product in front of the right person so they can buy it. At the end of the day, if I do that, I'll be successful. I just, you know, now technically wise, you know, there's a lot that we know that you can do. You know, you can build all sorts of automations and customization, everything else. But at the end of the day, I'm still doing the same thing. I'm still putting the products in front of the right people so they can buy. And I think anybody with any product or any mentality, if they want to go make money, you know, selling products online, that's all it is. So if you have a good product and you want to sell it, put it in front of the right people that want to buy it. So for instance, don't go try to sell charcuterie boards to a deer hunter. You know, I'm not going to buy a charcuterie board, you know, like, don't go try to sell dresses to men. Well, it was 2020, but you know, I'm just saying.
Brave new world, man. It's a brave new world.
You know what I'm saying? Like, just be pragmatic. Like, if you have a product, just find those people that you know would want to buy that product. And, you know, it's as simple as that. They're going to buy it. Like, laws of average come into play in everything that happens in life. Like, if 100 people see your product, the laws of average say that a certain percentage of those people are going to buy it. So if it's 10, if it's 3, if it's 20, if you know the laws of average, then you know your numbers at that point. Like, you know, so you just work at it with a very, you know, very clear mind, you know, just make it make sense to you and you can get it.
Well, and I think one of the big questions that I've gotten so many times over the years, like working with different people and doing some of the sales stuff and mastermind sales and stuff like that, is like, oh, well, do I, like, how do I find what to sell? And you know, there's always these different things, right? Because there's certain people are like, oh, find your passion. You know, you always want to work in your passion. There's other people who are like, just look at the numbers and sell what makes money. And so I think either one can work. But for you, it seems like you did, because obviously you are passionate about hunting and outdoors and stuff like that. And so here you are building this brand called Bucks Brand. And it started with Bucks Brand in Nebraska, right? And then it branched out from there. So were you one of those people that's like, hey, I'm passionate about this, and so I want to find something that I can sell within kind of this hunting space? Or was it something like, hey, I just know you can make a bunch of money there, and so I'll just do that?
Yeah. So to your point, either way, finding a passion that you're passionate about and figuring out what sells in it is one way, or go looking at the numbers and finding products that you already know to sell. Those are the only two ways you can do this. You can't find, like, if nobody's buying a product that you're passionate about, then you need to throw it away. Like, it doesn't work. So you need to go into your passion if you do that way, and you need to make sure you find products that people will buy. Vice versa, you can get rid of your passion thing and just find products that people are going to buy and be successful that way, straight to the point, right? But for me, I went the route of, I'm passionate about hunting, and I found products that people would buy. I made a product that people wanted. I changed it enough and figured it out enough to figure out what did my, you know, what did that audience of people that I was trying to sell to, what would they buy? You know, what would they buy if they were going to buy something? I didn't have a product when I went down there and started. So this, I mean, you can't see it's on video, but like this product that I made is a logo that I knew people were passionate about because they were passionate about the University of Nebraska. They're passionate about deer hunting. And all I did was say, well, if you like hunting and you like Nebraska, let me put the antlers on top of the inn. Bada bing, bada boom. It's not hard. Like, let's do this. And that's what I did. I figured out like in this niche of hunting, what the people I was around wanted. And you could do it that way. Or you could, again, like you said, numbers don't lie. Only people do as they say, but you go find the products that sell and just sell them too. I did the passion route and I love it. You know, like I don't regret it. Could I made more money if I just went to products that I already knew was selling? 100%. But I'll never change the fact that I did something I was passionate about and I loved, you know, and I found a product that I could, you know, be passionate about.
Well, and I think too, it's such a, like, I don't know, man, that there's kind of that old saying, like there's a couple things that make men like completely crazy. It's women and sports and like maybe hunting. And so it's like literally two of the three things that people get fanatical about, like hunting and sports, you figured out a way to fuse them together. And so if somebody's like, I love hunting, I love Nebraska. Oh my gosh, I can get a shirt that has hunting and Nebraska on it, right? Like, yeah. Of course that's going to sell. So, yep. So then, but after that, then you started branching out and obviously you've been scaling and building and doing all these other things. I guess like for the people out there that, because I actually know people are like, hey, I want to sell stuff online. Like what would be step one? They're like, okay, cool. Cody says it's easy. Find a product, find people to put it in front of. But what the hell is step one? Like if somebody does want to do this, where would you say, like, do they go get a Shopify account and do some tutorial videos or like what would be like the very, very first step if you could at least point them in the right direction?
Yeah. So step one is you obviously have to have something to sell. Like that's bottom line. You have to have something to sell. So step one would be figuring out what that product would be and how you can figure out what that product could be is there's a few ways you can find products to sell. You can do the old testing method, you know, like, let me, you know, just try all these products that are online from AliExpress, you know, to Amazon, to eBay and Etsy. And, you know, let me find a product that somebody else made and somebody else has, and let me figure out if I can sell their product. You know, that's pretty easy. It's the old affiliate marketing way, but like you're not an affiliate. You're literally taking their product and you're putting it in front of people you think would buy it. You know, it's the same mentality of an affiliate, but no, it's not, you know, that's the first possible scenario is you can find somebody else's product to sell. The other way, you know, first step is you can find a product or make a product yourself. So meaning make a product yourself, that would be if you want to invent some new type of thing, you want to design something, you want to make wooden benches or wooden frames or in your house, you're going to build something with your hands. Like you either find a product that somebody else has that you can sell that, you know, that's in your niche or passion or that already sells, like we said, the numbers, or you go make a product, you know, physically. And that other than that, there's no other ways you can get a product to figure out how to go do this. Most people have great ideas for products. Just they don't know how to execute on building it or making it or where do they go get it done, right? So if you do have an idea, your first step would be find the person that can help you execute on getting that thing built. Now, there's a ton of people out there. Google is your friend, you know? And if you can't do that route, then there's a ton of websites, Amazon, Etsy, eBay, AliExpress, where there's millions of products out there in the world that people buy that you can find to go sell yourself. And there's no different. That's what Walmart does. That's what Target does. That's what you're not some thrift store seller. It's not skeezy. It's not sleazy. It's not whatever for selling somebody else's stuff. Like that's the way the world works. You walk into Kohl's and they have a laundry list, you know, racks full of stuff from other people. That's what people do. And you're no different than the Amazon and the Etsy's, the eBay's of the world. You're just finding products yourself that you want to sell.
Oh, that's great stuff. So obviously too, you help people do this, right? I mean, if Absolutely. Someone is like, hey, I, you know, sounds great. I want to figure out how to do this. You're someone who teaches that. So if someone does want to maybe come and learn from you or connect with you, where would be the first spot to come and check out some of the educational stuff that you have?
Yeah. So e-commerce brand academy. So, the reason why it's called the e-commerce brand academy, which is ecommercebrandacademy.com, is when I first started, when I went from the Target to my own brand, to my own business, I should say, I built a brand. And so my mentality was, I want to build a brand of something where it's something that I'm passionate about, that I know, that I love, that I did, that's hunting and fishing, like I did, you're going to understand what the branding means. You know, like, why do you buy Nike shoes and Amazon, go to Amazon to buy your products? And why do you go to, you know, this store versus that one? Like, the brand side of it is why I put the brand in the middle of this. Is a very vital piece to selling anything, you know? So it's called ecommercebrandacademy.com, because I position everything that I teach around, letting you understand like the branding side of it. And branding doesn't mean creating logos and picking colors. It means from your customer service to, you know, how your customers, you know, interact in your store to when they send you an email, do you reply back within 24 hours? It's all these things that go with into a brand, and you do not have to have Nike checks on the side of your tennis shoes to sell tennis shoes. You know, like that's not at all true. You know what I'm saying? So, ecommercebrandacademy.com is how you'd find myself, you know, how we teach it. I had a lot of people asking me, you know, Cody, what are you doing? How do you do it? Why'd you do it? Why'd you do it this way? Why'd you do it that way? So I went out and I put this whole like training thing together. I became the guru that I mentioned earlier. And the reason being is because I found myself regurgitating information. I found myself actually a lot of good friends would say, okay, how do I do this? How do I do that? And it was just easier to say, hey, here's a video. I put it together. You can go there and check it out. So I put together a bunch of videos, a bunch of courses, a bunch of training, how I did stuff, how I do stuff, how you can do stuff from scratch. It's all inside that academy.
No, that's great stuff. And I think that a lot of people get overwhelmed. And so one of the things that I think is great is that you're not one of these like techie nerds that grew up in San Francisco, right? Like you're like a lot of us, I'm sure. And I know a lot of people that are listening to that, whether they're men or women, you know, kind of average people, I guess, like grew up playing sports and maybe wasn't, you know, part of the computer clubs or whatever else, but now here you are like able to actually make money online. And I think that it gets such a weird connotation for people who aren't in kind of the circles that we've been in, you know, because you think of like people sitting at home and making money online. It's like, number one, okay, what type of scam are you running? Mm-hmm. Right. Or like number two, like how do you even make money online? Everybody that I've ever heard of doing that is like, you know, felons and stuff. Right. So no, like when you get average people or, you know, I guess not average, you're not average, dude, you're so much better than average. Right. But,
just but normal blue collar people though, man.
Yes, exactly. Just kind of a red blooded American that yeah. sits home and makes money from his computer. But no, like being able to hear that, I think can give some people some hope that this stuff isn't too crazy out of reach, right? Because again, like right now we're going through this COVID stuff and I know a lot of people are losing their jobs and they're losing hope and everything else. And it's like, you know what? Like there are other ways if you are out there struggling and maybe you can't find a job and you can't relocate and all these different things, like there is at least opportunities, right?
100%. So I thoroughly believe, you know, the men that work with their hands, you know, the women that provide services, like those jobs, they're vital pieces of our economy and the world. And they always have been, they always will be. But that world that you live in and that piece, you know, there's the exact same. If you copy and pasted that onto the internet, it's the exact same. Like there's the same things going on when you open a laptop and you get into the internet world. That life exists on the internet, and now navigating it and figuring out which site to go to and who to trust and what to learn and how you do those things is the same exact thing that you had to do with your hands, going to tech school, you know, getting the education, finding your customers. Like it's the same thing. It's just you translate it from now having to shake a hand in person. So you have to do this digital handshake of like meeting on the internet and doing Zoom calls. And like, but in the sense of it, it's the exact same thing. Like you just act normal, but you turn your normal from in real life, you know, you're doing it through a computer, and it's the same world you live in. So there's a ton of opportunities in there that, you know, are still exist. You know, people say, oh, you know, opportunities are gone on the internet. You know, like, no, it's the same world. Like there's so many opportunities in the real world of going out and working with your hands and building things and growing things. There's the same amount of opportunities when you open a laptop and get the internet too.
Oh, for sure. All right. So I want to be able to get you out of here. I appreciate your time. Obviously we've talked a lot about kind of your life, everything that you've done, and kind of the three pillars that we always come back to that I wanted to do this podcast around are liberation, lifestyle, and legacy. So yeah, we've talked a lot about the mindset that took you from kind of where you were with the sports and the setbacks, and then to propel you to where you are now. Obviously the lifestyle that you're able to live. I mean, you're out here hunting with us a couple of years ago, right? Running around on the mountains with us. But now I guess, you know, and you're still a young guy and I think that this can change, but you know, like, what do you feel like up to this point with everything you've done, everything you've accomplished? Like, if someone were to ask, like, what do you want the legacy of Cody Near to be?
Yep. So I want to say, bottom line is that my faith and my family and my friendships were always strong, and that I had of like when people ask those questions and those people, they have positive things to say about me. I don't care if they said that guy was rich or he was, you know, strong or he was the fastest guy in the field, all that other stuff. Like, none of that matters, right? Like, my faith, my family, my friendships, as long as those things are strong, the fourth piece of that whole thing would be my financials, you know, like, and that's only because I want to be able to set my kids up to have that transitional life where they're figuring out how they pay the bill. I don't want them to ever have a vehicle get impounded out of their driveway. You know, like, I want them to learn how to make their own money, but, you know, I want to set up long-term, financial freedom for them to understand that they can build a life themselves, but not have to stress about it the way I did.
I think you're doing it right. I mean, that's the good part. You've been able to go through all this stuff, and there's obviously a ton of lessons, a ton of gold in there. So make sure you guys, if you're not already, shoot Cody a friend request on Facebook, follow him. What's your Instagram handle?
Cody Near.
At Cody Near. All right. Yep. And then also too, if you guys are interested in learning about some of the stuff Cody talked about, you know, make sure to go to ecommercebrandacademy.com. Check out, he's got a ton of good stuff. In fact, I've never had anybody on here that is in like the internet marketing space. I know it's kind of like the world I came from, but I've tried to stay away from it because there is so much scammy, spammy stuff out there. But yeah. I know Cody is one of the good guys out there that's teaching people the right way to do it. So make sure you check him out. Appreciate Thanks again, it. Cody, for coming on, man. I appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to another episode of the Primal King Podcast. There is one thing that I will ask you to do. Please make sure that you are subscribed to the show so you get all of the new episodes coming out. Also, please make sure that you rate and review the show so that way other people can have access to this podcast, to this content, and this community. Again, thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you next time.